जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जामुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्रस्त श्री श्रीमद्भवाइंग श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय हिताय गौ प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि गो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गवेश दी असंबल देवची आ गवेश दी असंबल देवची आ गवेश दी असंबल देवची आ गवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग हियर अ कपल ऑफ वर्सेस इन ग्लोरिफिकेशन ऑफ द भागवतम Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasamrita Triptasya Nanyatya Syad Rati Kuchit. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. Pravishta Karnarandhena Swanam Bhava Saroruham Dunoti Shamalam Krishna Sailasya Yatha Sharat. Srimad Bhagavatam, the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material associations such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. That's from the second canto, 285. And this is from the 12th canto. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahansyam Ekam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyate Tatra Jnana Viraga Bhakti Sahitam Naishkarmyam Avishkritam Tachrin Van Supatan Vicharana Paro Bhaktya Vimuchendara. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahansas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work, together with the processes of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. Vimuchen, completely liberated. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha. Text 32. Word meanings: Maya, by me, Yata, as, Anuktam, told, Avadi, was explained, Te, to you, Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krita Avatarasya, who assumed the incarnation, Sumitra, O dear Vidura, Cheshtitam, the activities, Yata, as, Hiranyaksha, Udara, very extensive, Vikrama, prowess, Mahamridhe, in a great fight, Kridanavat, like a plaything, Nirakrita, was killed. Let's see. Maya yatanuktam avadite hare. Kṛtāvatārasya sumitra cheṣṭitam yatā hiranyākṣa udāra vikramo mahamṛde krīḍana vandarā kṛta. Maya yatanuktam avadite hare. Kṛtāvatārasya sumitra cheṣṭitam yatā hiranyākṣa udāra vikramo mahamṛde krīḍavan Kridanavan. Mahamrite Kridanavan Nirakrita. Mahamrite Devitavatarasya Sumitra Tishtita Yata Yuranyaksho Dada Vikrama Mahamrida Krida Navanya Krita Maya Yutan Uttam Krita Vatarasya Sumitra Tishtitam Hita Hiranyaksha Udara Vikrama Mahamrida Krida Navanya Krita Maya Yutan Uktam Avarite Hare Krita Vatarasya Sumitra Tishtitam Yata Hiranyaksha Udara Vikrama Mahamrida Krida Navanya Krita Maya Yutana Uttama Bhadite Hare Krita Vatarasya Sumitra Tishtitam Yata Hiranyaksha Udara Vikrama Mahamrida Krida Navanya Krita. Translation. Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here the sage Maitreya admits that he explained the incident of the killing of Hiranyaksha by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a straight narration. He did not manufacture anything or add interpretation, but explained whatever he had heard from his spiritual master. Thus he accepted as bona fide the system of parampara, or receiving the transcendental message in disciplic succession. Unless received by this bona fide process of hearing from a spiritual master, the statement of an acharya or preceptor cannot be valid. It is stated here that although the demon Hiranyaksha was unlimited in prowess, he was just like a doll for the Lord. A child breaks so many dolls without real endeavor. Similarly, although a demon may be very powerful and extraordinary in the eyes of an ordinary man in the material world, to the Lord, killing such a demon is no difficulty. He can kill millions of demons as simply as a child plays with dolls and breaks them. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So Prabhupada bases his purport, the first part here, about parampara, on one word, anuktam, in the yathanuktam, maya yathanuktam. So anuktam, told. This is a typical thing that Srila Prabhupada would do when he would see the word anu. The word anu means follow, and Srila Prabhupada always took it as implying parampara. So it just says told, but because the anu is there, follow, it means he didn't speculate. He told it as it is, coming down in this disciplic succession. So that's the main point Prabhupada would make here. Of course, he would make it over and over again. Pretty much everywhere in the Bhagavatam, wherever the idea comes up that we have to hear, Prabhupada would always make this point. You have to hear in the parampara. Don't go to these speculators who jump immediately to the 10th canto and that kind of thing. So he would always stress on this, how important it is to hear. When I was reading this, I was thinking of, well, this whole pastime, it reminded me how I'm always thinking a lot about where did this take place? When I read something in the Bhagavatam, a lot of times I wonder, it's not always clear to me, where did this take place exactly? Was this in the heavenly planets? Was this on earth? Where on earth did it take place? And I find it's actually quite interesting, especially in Krishna's Leela, where you see where different Leelas of Krishna took place. Now, of course, this particular Leela, it took place in the ocean, and this is a cosmic battle, so it wasn't any particular place on earth where it took place. But when Krishna performed his pastimes, of course, he was going to different places in India, which is, of course, a real place that we know about, and there are maps, and you can look on the map, and you can see, oh, here's this place, here's that place. So I did a little research, actually, to see where some different pastimes that Krishna did, where they took place. This is not, I suppose it's kind of a tangent on the class. It's really not in the main point of the class about hearing in parampara. But I thought you might find this interesting. And it gives a chance to remember different leelas of the Lord, of Lord Krishna. I've mentioned before, I have a practice of listening to translations of the Bhagavatam. So I was just listening to the 10th canto, and I was hearing, of course, Krishna going here and there, doing different things. And a lot of times then I wonder, because a lot of these ancient places where Krishna went, they're known, and people that live there, they know, oh, this is where Krishna did this particular thing. So they're real places on a map. In fact, I was thinking, I don't know if they do this because I haven't seen a recent printing of the Krishna book, but I thought, gee, it would be nice if they had actually a picture of India and they showed where all these different places are that Krishna went. So in any case, I'm going to go through this, some of these places that I looked at. The first is when Krishna, of course, now this is, I'm skipping Vrindavan. That's another whole thing, where Krishna's different pastimes took place in Vrindavan. Of course, you do Vrindavan Parikrama, and you learn about all these different places, real places, where Krishna performed his leelas. So I'm beginning really in the second part of Krishna's leela. So when Krishna, of course, he got a letter from Rukmini asking him to come and rescue her from her proposed marriage to Shishupal, which she didn't want. And so Krishna had to go there. It says he went there in one night, his speedy chariot with his horses. And so she's from Vidarbha. Vidarbha is in the state of Maharashtra. Maharashtra is where Bengal is. And of course it goes east from there into central India. And so the city there is Vidarbha. So the distance from Dwarka to there is 800 miles. So Krishna went there overnight in his jet-packed chariot. actually, I was thinking because we hear the story. First, Rukmini, she sees the Brahmin that she sent to give Krishna the message. So she sees the Brahmin, and I was thinking, I wonder how the Brahmin got there so fast. But actually, he went with Krishna. He rode along, so he didn't have to walk back. That's the other thing. People are walking everywhere. It's an amazing thing. I was thinking in Lord Chaitanya's Leela how devotees would go every year to Jagannath Puri. So it's something like 500 miles, something like that, from Navadvip to Puri. And they would go with a group sometimes of 200 people. Imagine 200 people. And Shivananda Sena, of course, he was the organizer for the whole thing. So imagine you're walking with 200 people, and somehow you have to find lodging and food for all these people. And we know there's one pastime, of course, it was a little delayed, and Nityananda got angry, and he kicked him, Shivananda Sena. So that traveling is a difficult thing. And sometimes the devotees, the lady devotees didn't always go, something. Probably, it's a pretty long, it's not easy to, you know, walk that whole distance. It takes like at least a month, something like that, to walk there. And they would spend, actually I wasn't going to talk about this, but anyway, they would spend 4 months of the rainy season there often. So they would walk for at least a month or so to get there, spend 4 months there, spend a month or so to come back. So half of their lives just having to do with pilgrimage to see Lord Chaitanya. So I'm thinking, I wonder what kind of work they did. They could take 6 months off to go see Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, these are all liberated souls, Lord Chaitanya's associates. So anyway, that was the city. So, that's it for Rukmini, at least at this point, in case something else comes up. So another place we hear about is the city of Mithila, which is in the kingdom of Videha. This is in the area of Bihar and Jharkhand. So Bihar is just to the west of Bengal, you know, northern part of India. Even if you're not from India, you have some idea what the map of India looks like. So all the way, Dwarka, of course, is at the very tip of the west, the farthest west as you can go. And Bengal is completely on the other side. So in that area on the other side, that's where the city of Mithila is. So a couple of things about that. Krishna, now I think he was in that area, yes. The whole story of the Shyamantaka jewel, you may remember one of the scenes in that story, is this Shatadanva, he killed Satrajit, Satyabhama's father, Krishna's father-in-law. So Krishna thought that he had the jewel, the whole intrigue about the Shyamantaka jewel. So Krishna chased him down. Shatadanva knew that Krishna was coming after him, so he got on a horse. It said the horse could travel 800 miles. But somehow he made it all the way, which is more than 800 miles, from Dwarka all the way to Bihar. It's more than 800 miles. But anyway, it says the horse died after 800 miles or so. So that was in the general area of this Mithila. So it says Balaram spent several years visiting the king there. So Balaram was with Krishna for this particular pastime. You may remember they killed Krishna, then they didn't find the jewel on him. And Balaram said, oh, we just killed him for no reason. But he had murdered someone else. So it says Balaram spent several years there, which is interesting. He left Dwarka. He just went out on, to do something. Then he decided to, well, I'm going to visit my friend, the king of Mithila. His name was Janaka. And it was during that time that Duryodhana came and learned the military arts from him while Balaram was visiting his friend, the king of Mithila. This is also the place where this just kind of comes out of, there are many chapters, and especially in the 10th canto, there's some chronology there, but there are also different chapters. There's no particular chronology. It's like once upon a time while Krishna was living in Dwarka, he did this or that. So once upon a time, he decided to go visit these two great devotees, Shrutadeva and Bahulashva. So they lived also in this area. So Krishna went all the way across India to go visit these two devotees, which is, to me, is very interesting. I'm thinking, well, there's no devotees in between. These devotees must have been really special that Krishna made that trip all the way across India to visit these two devotees. And of course, he didn't go alone. He had a whole group of sages with him. They all piled onto it. Well, then it's the pile on. Krishna can do anything with his chariot, so he can make it huge like a palace if he wants to. So they traveled with him, all these sages. I think Shukadeva was one of them, actually. You read the list of the names, it's quite interesting who they were. Parashuram was one of them. Because Parashuram is a Brahmin, actually. Killed all the Kshatriyas, but he was a Brahmin himself. So they all went there with Krishna. They went to both houses at the same time. They went to the palace of Bahulashva, the king, and went to the humble abode of Shrutadeva, the Brahmin. Not only did Krishna duplicate himself, but duplicated all the sages, too. They were in both places at the same time. So this happened in Mithila. So Avanti, you hear about Avanti. The Brahmin from Avanti, there's a section in the Uddhava Gita. There's a story of the Avanti Brahmana. There's a famous verse that's quoted. It has to do with sannyas. The purport of the verse is that when you take sannyas, you worship Krishna. You don't become a Mayavadi, essentially. Lord Chaitanya quoted this verse. So that was a Brahmin from Avanti. So that's a region in central India. It includes Ujjain and Mahishmati. And Krishna's wife Mitravinda was from that area. That's also the location of, well, that's where Parashuram started his campaign. And the Narmada River is there. This is one of, Prabhupada, in one purport, he says, this is one of the five celestial rivers in India. And he says these rivers, they're also celestial because they also flow on the heavenly planets. This really interested me because sometimes I hear there are a couple of pastimes that took place on the bank of the Narmada River. One of them is the Asuras and the Suras having a big battle. So I wasn't sure where this was, so I'm thinking it was probably where it's flowing in the heavenly planets. And also, Bali Maharaj was holding sacrifices there. Bali Maharaj is, the area is, it says on the bank of the Narmada River, Bhrigu Katcha, which means the place of Bhrigu. Now, Bali Maharaj is actually, the priests that perform sacrifices for Bali Maharaj, they're, of course, under the guidance of Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya, interestingly, also comes in the Bhrigu line of spiritual masters. But there was some contention between Bhrigu, Brihaspati and Shukracharya. So they kind of split up. Shukracharya ended up being the guru for the Asuras. So anyway, there's a battle between them, and apparently it took place in the Narmada River in the heavenly planets. And when Vamanadeva went to the sacrifice of Bali Maharaj, that seems to have been also in the heavenly planets. Of course, another evidence for the piece of evidence for that is that who's Vamanadeva? He's the son of Aditi. So Aditi, of course, is the mother of the demigods, so that would make sense. So actually, this Mitravinda, whom Krishna married, this is in the, there's a section, the five, Krishna marries five queens. You know, after Rukmini, then he married these five, and they're described. So this particular queen, Mitravinda, was the daughter of Krishna's aunt, Rajadi Devi. Now, there's a little something more about her coming up, Rajadi Devi, Krishna's aunt. She's actually the sister of Vasudeva. And let's see. The five daughters of King... This is a verse from the ninth canto, 924. That's the end of all the genealogies where we end up with Krishna. And then the tenth canto follows after Krishna is introduced, after his genealogy, and so many genealogies are given there. So when we hear about King Shuddha and the area Shuddha Sena, so the five daughters of King Shuddha named Prita, Shuddha Deva, Shuta Kirti, Shuta Shava, and Rajadi Devi were Vasudeva's sisters. So Prita, of course, is Kunti. This king, he gave her to King Kunti. Right, Kunti, that's his name? That's how she got the name Kunti. Yes. Shura gave Prita to his friend Kunti, who had no issue, and therefore another name of Prita is Kunti. So anyway, so that they were from this area originally, Avanti Desh. And let's see, Kaushalya or Kosala, that's where Ayodhya is. Krishna's wife Satya or Nagnajiti is from there. So remember, Krishna, he hears about these princesses. He wants to marry them. They're having a swayamvar, so he goes there. So this time he went to their Ayodhya, which is still quite a ways. If you know where Ayodhya is, it's northeast of Delhi, just not so far south from the Himalayas, that very northern part of India. So Krishna went there. That's where Krishna had to tie up the seven bulls, defeat the seven bulls. That's Satya. She's also called Nagnajiti. So that's where she was from, Ayodhya. Then the Kaikeya kingdom, that's in the northwest, just below the Himalayas, way in the far northwest of India. So Krishna married Bhadra, the daughter of Krishna's paternal aunt, Shrutakirti. So she was also in that list that I just read. So this Shruta Kirti, she's the sister of Vasudev and Kunti Devi or Prita. So Krishna married their daughter or her daughter Bhadra. We find a lot of this first cousin marriages in the Bhagavatam, actually. This is frowned upon today. They talk about the problems of, you know, intermarriage, family marriage, and people get defects and so on. But it doesn't seem to have been a problem for Krishna. It was quite a common thing, apparently, at those during that time. And of course, Krishna, he can make it right. Then Lakshmana, this is another, so I'm going through these different queens. Lakshmana was the daughter of the king of Madra, next to the Kaikeya kingdom. So this is in the same area, in northwest Himalayas. These two kingdoms are right next to each other, Madra and Kaikeya. When I first read it, I thought, Madra, that's probably Madras, but it's not. It's a completely different part of India. And then, this one is interesting. Now, this Bhoomasura, you know Bhoomasura, he had kidnapped these 16,000 princesses. So Krishna went to rescue them. And actually, Bhoomasura, the beginning of the pastime is that Krishna hears, well, let me read this verse, actually. Here's a verse from the 10th canto, chapter 59, verses 2 and 3. This is the beginning of the chapter about this pastime. After Bhoomasura had stolen the earrings belonging to Indra's mother, along with Varuna's umbrella and the demigod's playground at the peak of Mandara Mountain, Indra went to Lord Krishna and informed him of these misdeeds. The Lord, taking his wife Satyabhama with him, then rode on Garuda to Prag Jyotishpur, which is surrounded on all sides by fortifications consisting of hills, unmanned weapons, unmanned, I guess AI operated, I guess, water, fire, and wind, and by obstructions of Murapasha wire. I found this verse has so many interesting points to it, doesn't it? First of all, the Indra stole these things, Aditi's earrings. They must have been really valuable because he really wanted to get them back. And how did he do that? How did he steal her earrings? Did he rip them off or he snuck in during the night? Or how did he do that? I mean, Bhoma stole the earrings of Indra's mother. And Varuna's umbrella, which is apparently something pretty valuable. And the demigod's playground on the peak of Mandara Mountain. It took the whole mountain peak, I guess. Or at least the playground. Of course, it wasn't just a little playground with a few slides. I'm sure it's a big, elaborate thing. So he stole those things, and Indra went to Krishna. Of course, as this pastime plays out, Krishna, of course, he kills Bhoomasura, returns all these things. And then when he's in the heavenly planets, now he did this because Indra asked him to do it. Then he goes to Indra, and then Satyabhama wants a parijata flower. So Krishna says, I'll give you the whole plant. We'll take the whole tree. Then Indra gets upset. This guy, I shouldn't offend him. But Indra does amazing things. He gets upset with Krishna for stealing the parijata, and a big fight takes place. So anyway, so then Krishna, he goes to this Prag Jyotishpur on Indra's request to retrieve these things. And it just happens that this Bhoomasura has these 16,000 princesses also, who are all apparently extremely beautiful, as tends to happen. So this place, Prag Jyotishpur, is in Assam, the area of Assam. And Assam is like on the other side of Bangladesh. It's way out there. It's at the very far, far end of eastern India. So that's like 2,000 miles away from Dwarka. So that's the mission Krishna went on, 2,000 miles to do this particular leela. And then he had to bring all the princesses back with him somehow. So, of course, Krishna accomplishes. That's another thing I think about. You know, if you ever hear about the pioneers going west with their wagon trains, that was extremely austere. A lot of them just gave up and they said, all right, I'm just going to move to Missouri instead of California. Close enough. Or you come across the plains, because I went to college in Colorado. So when you come across these flat plains, then all of a sudden there's the Rocky Mountains. Like, whoa, we got to go through there? Forget it, Pikes Peak and all that stuff. So I think it was really a hard thing to cross. So a Christian takes these long journeys. Actually, I'll get to that in a little bit. Actually, I was going to talk about some of the other places. So let's see, what happened? Shonitapur. Oh, Banasura. So Banasura, you know, Banasura, you had 1,000 arms. And that's the story of Usha and Aniruddha. That, you know, the whole story that Usha had a dream and she saw this beautiful boy, and then her friend brought him with her mystic power into the palace, and then the king found out that his daughter was not a maiden anymore. He was pretty upset about that. A big battle took place. So that's in Shonitapur, Banasura. That's also in that area, that same area, all the way on the other side of India, Assam. Let's see. Oh, when at the marriage of Rukmini, you remember at the end, of course, Shishupal was supposed to marry her, and of course Krishna and his army defeated. That's another thing in our part of this story. Krishna went there alone, and then Balaram heard. He said, "Oh, I think there's going to be a fight if Krishna goes there to kidnap Rukmini." So then he went there. But he also went there with a whole Akshohini, at least one Akshohini, in the same amount of time, whatever it took. Somehow he got all of them there overnight or in a few hours or something, whatever it was, 800 miles away. So then, of course, at the end of the whole thing, Rukmi, who was very upset, he got, Krishna cut his mustache and beard and hair and humiliated him. So he went and moved away to some place and founded a city called Bhojakata. So that Bhojakata is also in Bihar, near Patna, Bihar. That's also almost in Bengal, all the way. That's where he left. He went there from central India. He went all the way over there to found his city. And it was there that his daughter was going to marry Aniruddha. Rukmi's daughter was going to marry Aniruddha. Even though there was this, bad blood between Krishna and Rukmi, because Rukmini wanted the marriage to happen, then Rukmi agreed to it. So at that marriage, you may remember, that's when Balaram killed Rukmi over this gambling match. And he also smashed out the teeth of the king of Kalinga, right? Because he was showing, seems to be a thing, if you want to insult me, you show your teeth, I don't know. So he smashed his teeth. So this king of Kalinga, this marriage took place in Bihar. And the king of Kalinga, he was from, Kalinga. Kalinga is Orissa on the east coast of India. So that's where the king of Kalinga was from. He didn't have to go too far. He just had to go up to Bihar, not so far. Let's see. Also, Jarasandha's place was also in that. The Magadha kingdom was also in that part of India, which is about. So Jarasandha, he went 18 times. He took a whole army every time. Apparently, it seems like 23 Akshohinis every time. And Krishna didn't kill him when he first attacked Mathura because he thought, well, this guy's such an idiot, he's going to keep coming back. And I came here to kill all these, soldiers that are burdening the earth. So he'll just keep bringing him to my doorstep and make my job a little easier. But he was coming from that area to Mathura, which is like 500 miles. So every time he was traveling all that, and I think, how do they feed all those soldiers along the way? I always think about the logistics of these things. Maybe they know how to preserve things really well. Just like in Chaitanya Lila, we have the Raghavira Jali, right? The devotees are coming from Bengal, and they have all these preparations for Lord Chaitanya, coming in bags. I'm thinking, boy, I guess pickles or some things you can make, but things that, and even, maybe you put them in a refrigerator for a week or something, but they last for months. In fact, Lord Chaitanya had a whole corner of a room for prasadam that was a year old. And of course, he can make it so they don't go bad. He ate the whole thing, right? Govinda said, Lord Chaitanya, these devotees keep giving me this prasadam, and then they want to know if you ate it or not, and what am I supposed to say? It's so uncomfortable. I said, what's wrong with you, Govinda? Don't you know anything? Bring it to me. Then he ate it all. So anyway, it didn't go stale somehow. So maybe they knew how to preserve things well in the old days. They could travel with armies, and you know, it said the army runs on its stomach. So they had to be fed somehow. Anyway, so Jarasandha went 500 miles every time to attack Krishna. So now just where Krishna traveled frequently between Dwaraka and Hastinapur. Now, first I wanted to mention where these places are. Hastinapur and Indraprastha. Now, can't get into the whole Mahabharata story, but somehow or other, the Kurus were in Hastinapur and the Pandavas were in Indraprastha. They built their own city because the Kurus wouldn't give them their Hastinapur, which they rightfully belonged to them. So where are these places? Indraprastha is actually New Delhi in that area. And that's where the Jamuna flows through there. And Hastinapur is about 50 miles or so northeast of Delhi, in an area of the city of Meerut, M-E-E-R-U, Meerut. So that's up in that area. So it's about, you know, 50 miles or so northeast of Delhi. And Indraprastha is in the Delhi region. And when the Battle of Turkshetra took place, that's at least 100 miles from Delhi, pretty much north, maybe a little bit northwest of Delhi. So they didn't fight just right outside the city of Hastinapur. We may have this in our mind that it was just nearby, but it was actually quite a ways away. They went there to that. I don't know why they chose that particular place. Of course, we know it's Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. But who decided that's where they were going to fight? I'm not sure. Maybe that's there in the Mahabharata. But they went all the way out there, and that's where they fought. So when Krishna would travel to Hastinapur, to Dwarka, and Arjuna, of course, he also went back and forth. So that's something like 900 miles from Hastinapur or Delhi, that region there. So it definitely takes some time. And Krishna went there, at least for the Rajasuya sacrifice, he went with all his queens. The whole procession is described, how wonderful it is. And I'm thinking, boy, it's hard to imagine. I mean, Krishna can make it wonderful, but ordinarily it doesn't sound like it would be so wonderful going 900 miles on foot. Or that, you know, some are on chariots or, you know, some kind of, what do we want to call it, flatbed kind of thing. I had the experience many years when I was a kid. I visited some farm, and they had a buckboard, I guess they call it. And they took us to a ride on a farm road, and it didn't have any springs on it. And it's like riding a rickshaw in Vrindavan, you know, it jars your bones. So I think when they're traveling across, obviously they must have better conveyances, so it's not such a rough ride. Of course, they also had carriers, that's mentioned too. Imagine being a palanquin carrier. By the way, the word is pronounced palanquin, anyway. So, you know, you get these four guys and they're carrying. We know the example of this Jarabharat. Of course, he was one of them. He was causing problems. So you had to have four people the same size with the same pace, and they have to, and they walk all day long. I'm saying, boy, there's really stratification in the Vedic culture. You know, you got the people riding on the palanquin, and then there are those carrying. You know, they have to walk all day long. But it's never, I mean, these aspects of the story are not brought out. They don't say it was really, no, it was glorious, it was beautiful. The soldiers are walking in their armors glistening in the sunshine, and somehow or other they're getting wonderful prasadam along the way, and everything is taken care of. And of course, it's Krishna's journey. He's the, roadie. He's the one who set it all up. So he has all his people to make it happen. Everything it happens perfectly. And then, of course, I'll just add this one thing. When they arrive in Indraprastha, when the Rajasuya sacrifice took place, which place Yudhishthira was living? Where was the Sudharma Assembly Hall? I'm not sure where that was. Anyway, the Rajasuya sacrifice took place. But when Krishna arrived with all his queens, then Yudhishthira put them up. we got 1,600 guests arrive one day, and they all have a place to stay, they all have to have a place to stay, and they all have to be fed, and so on. And they have to be entertained. There's different kinds of varieties of entertainment every day for them. So it's all perfectly arranged by the mystic power of Krishna and Krishna and his devotees. Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he mentions to Krishna that he wants to perform this sacrifice, he says, I want everyone to know the opulence of your devotees, how blessed someone is to become your devotee. Therefore, that's why I want to put on this Rajasuya sacrifice. And of course, Krishna was ultimately the guest of honor there, the main person. And so that was Yudhishthira. So anyway, I was just, all of these things, I always think of these different details, that how Krishna arranges all of these things for his own enjoyment. It's all part of his lila. But it's also, you know, these are actual places that are there on the map, and that you can visit them, and there are shrines at so many places, and the local people tend to know that this took place here. This is part of Krishna's pastime. So the whole land of India. Now, all of this, all of Krishna's lila basically is in North India and somewhat down into Central India. But not Krishna, we don't hear about Krishna going to South India. Now, Balaram, he toured all around. He went all around. He went all the way to Setubandha, the tip of India. And Lord Ramchandra, of course, he did. He crossed over into Lanka. But Krishna stayed mostly in that upper part, northern region of India. Okay, that's a little something, because I couldn't think of anything else to say today. Let's read the translation again. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor's spiritual master. Of course, a lot of this was about where Krishna killed some demon. And it's always, he has to have some kind of a fight so he can enjoy. Otherwise, what's the fun if he just kills him? Like he kills Varaha, just sort of touched him. Or Balaram killed that Ramaharshan with a blade of grass. So obviously that he can do that. But I was just reading actually Sanat Goswami's commentary on Krishna fighting the wrestlers in Mathura. So Krishna, he can do that. He can sort of, I was mentioning this in my last class, he can get into the lila in such a way that he forgets that I'm the strongest of the strong and I can kill him with a tip of my finger because he wants to enjoy it. So he kind of puts that aside so he can get into it, you know. So he does that, and he did that when he was fighting with Chanura, I guess it was. Yeah, or his energies arrange it. His energies arrange for him to enjoy. That's their job. Yoga Maya, or Leela Shakti. All right, anything? We don't have Trivikram here today to give us more details. He knows all about these kinds of, Madhumati. Can you hear today?
I could hear half of your class.
Madhumati's having some hearing problems.
Yeah, I need to hear. but the part, I just wanted to make a comment about the part about Krishna marrying all these wives who are cousins, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, in the Vedic culture, understanding is that the brother, like the husband's family, the brother, that is family, that is your own family. But whereas let's say I'm married to Sesha Prabhu, so his brother, that's considered one family, but his sister is considered a different family.
Mm-hmm.
So marrying the sister is all right. Because marrying the sister's kids. And that's what you see here with Kunti and being the sister and their family or whatever. But the interesting part is, I had attended, I was trying to finish my degree after becoming a devotee, and I attended a class at Santa Fe College, and I mentioned that in class one time before. I took a class that I thought would be the easiest one, you know, because I had to kind of get my credits. So I took a class on something with genes, gene class or whatever. I forget it. It was 20 years ago or something. And the interesting part that hearing that class, because having the knowledge of what we understand, our understanding, and then taking that class, so many aspects of the Vedic culture and the Vedic understanding was actually proven by that particular class that I took. And one of them was the X and Y chromosomes mm-hmm. and how they work. And according to the class I attended, it was telling the same thing, that marrying between the brother family mm-hmm. is incest, and whereas the sister, because it's a different chromosome or something, it was proving that that was not in their terminology, but in the that was a different family. And actually, it also said that it gave great, it was very good for the intelligence to be married in that kind of, in that situation. So I thought that was very interesting. And there were other things that it said that, for example, if you marry from the same reservoir of water, you know, nowadays the reservoir of water is different, but let's say in a village and you have a reservoir of water, and if you marry somebody together with people drinking the same reservoir of water, that is very bad for your intelligence, like it's not good. And then it's interesting, in Vedic culture, it describes that one should not marry from the same village. It has that understanding that you should. And same village would be basically you have the well and so just for that understanding, I wanted to express that, you know, it might seem incest, but actually according even science says that it's not, but actually it's good for the intelligence.
And interesting.
Hare Krishna.
Mahamaya Prabhu.
Prabhu, I know sometimes in your classes you teach us the correct pronunciation for Sanskrit. So in the Dhammadharastika prayers that we're singing every day, the sixth verse, first line, the last word is Vishnu with an O at the end. And I just wanted to point out that it's not a mistake. It's not Vishnu.
Yes.
It's Vishnu. Hare Krishna.
A lot can be said about pronunciation, actually. My one word of advice is just read what's there and say it. Don't think that, you know, Satyavrata Muni didn't know what he was doing when he wrote Vishnu. He knew what he was doing. And our Mangalarti, Guru Vashtikam also. Whatever is there, Vishwanath knew what he was doing, so pronounce it the way he wrote it. And if you don't know how to do that, then look at the back of every one of our books. We have a pronunciation guide. I like to say it's not Sanskrit, it's phonics. When I learned to read in school, first grade, we learned by phonics. Hat, cat, sat, bat, you know, you learn phonics. So that's what it is. It could be any language. It's just, this is the sound. When you see this mark, then you make this sound. So whatever language it is, you just read the phonics. That's all. You read the letters, and you. So it's not a huge, shouldn't be a huge challenge. It's just a matter of wanting to do it and putting a little effort in. I think it's important. I mean, obviously, I've stressed it, and Prabhupada did too. Actually, he said the recordings are there. The records, he said. The records, he would say, for recordings. The records are there. You just listen. And of course, he wanted us to recite the verses every day so we would know how to pronounce the Sanskrit. So, and then who knows what you're saying if you're not saying it right. You may be saying something vulgar. you're trying to offer a prayer, but you're calling your, you know, guru an idiot or something. You know, who knows what you're saying if you're saying not saying the right thing. And it's not just some quirk of Sanskrit. In any language, if you say things wrong, you know. If I say billion instead of million, well, they sound almost the same. They're both labials pronounced with the lip, ba and ma, almost the same. But one's 1,000 times different than the other 10 times different. So anyway, I could get on my soapbox about pronouncing Sanskrit, but I think we should pay a little attention to it. After 50 years, devotees still can't say Prabhupada's pranam mantra correctly, I think. Boy, gee. Open the songbook and look at it syllable by syllable. Try to get it right, especially if you're leading kirtan, so you don't disturb Nagaraja's mind at Mangalarti. I can tell you every mistake every kirtan leader makes at Mangalarti. Not a good thing.
How about Jayarada Madhava? Slaughter that. I was just curious. You said that the Krishna took all 16,108 women with him?
Yeah.
Because it's also stated that when you go on pilgrimage, you're not supposed to take your wife with you.
Yeah.
He is God, but like you were saying, logistics of 16,000 princesses.
Yeah, well, he was going, it was kind of a social event. He was going to the Rajasuya sacrifice. Of course, then he left them there and they went to kill Jarasandha with Bhima and Arjuna. Told all his wives, I'll be back a little later. Got something to do today. Killed Jarasandha. Yeah, so he was, you're going on a trip with your wife, so he happens to have 16,000 of them that he has to take along. So. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.